Howdy, folks, and welcome to another edition of Cup of Sugar. I'm your host, Rylan Petras. My guest today is Stella Kuonu, a 28-year-old political science major who, at the end of fall 2021 semester, self-published her first novel, 30 Hontu, When Everything Fails at 30. 30 Hontu tells the story of Adowa, a young attorney in Chicago who is playing all the right cards and making a name for herself at the firm she works at. The love of her life, Jack, adores her, and would do anything to make sure their relationship flourishes. But even though Adowa seems to be doing everything right, she doesn't get the respect that she deserves at the firm, nor from her overprotective auntie Jennifer, who comes to town to visit for a month to see that the niece she raised gets married before she turns 30. Kuonu, who was born in Togo, said that women there are expected to study traditional subjects like law or medicine. Rarely would she see women on television. 30 Hontu. It's a testament to the fact that a woman shouldn't have to appeal to any one person's, let alone a culture's, expectations. Growing up in both Togolese and American culture, Kuonu creatively weaves a generational gap into the storyline by contrasting auntie Jennifer, who's very much old school in her ways and is a reference to the Togolese culture, and Adowa, who's adapted much of the American lifestyle. So sit down, relax, and join us as we discuss what happens when everything fails at 30. Hi, Stella. Am I pronouncing your last name right? Is it Kuonu?
Kuonu, the African way, but I would like to say it was Kuonu. I don't mind.
Kuonu. Okay. So from the way, you know, like I said, I interpreted it, it seems like, and is it, I'm probably going to mess this one too. Is it Adowa?
Adowa.
Adowa?
Adowa.
Okay. Adowa. So when she finally started living for herself, or it seems like she finally started living for herself rather than anyone else. So, what do you mean by when everything fails at 30? Is it like, kind of like what I was saying, that you need everything to kind of fall before you find who you really are, or what was your intention with that?
So, Trentan, originally, the book was going to get written in French. I specifically chose that title because in my culture, if you're not married by 25, believe me, you've missed the marriage train. while it's funny while I'm saying it, it's women, especially girls, are, you know, really pressure, like, once you, like, I did around 21, 22, 23, you know, the alarms start ringing from your parents, and then they're like, once you married, what's going on? As you can see throughout the book, I make a lot of references back to that, like, sure. When the aunt was cooking and she was like, why don't you just put on a headlight? Why don't you just put on a headlight? But it's more like, it's the pressure started adding up, and specifically, on my 25th birthday, no, it was 28, I'm sorry, my 28th birthday, my aunt wished me happy birthday. And then she goes like, by the way, when are you getting married? And I'm like, hey, I'm graduating soon. I'm working on a book. You know, I've accomplished so much. So it reinforced the idea that I need to start talking about this, you know. And my goal is to open up, hopefully, national dialogue about this conversation. It's still happening, you know. But the title was really geared towards that, you know. I wanted to grab people's attention, like, what's going on here? Like, we're happening.
And so, do you think that's something that is more reflective of, like, cultures, like West African cultures, or is it kind of just, do you think, I think the way maybe women are perceived, or the ideals that they're held to throughout, like, kind of all cultures?
I want to say yes and yes, right? Mind you, I grew up in both culture. I think I've talked about this enough in class. I can never be African enough. I can never be American enough. And in my African culture, it's strongly, you know, it's there. But while I was also growing up here, you know, I would have friends that would say, hey, you're getting, you know, 30 is knocking around. When are you getting married? And I feel like, up until recently, when the whole authenticity, it's, you know, it's rising up and people are saying, you know, I'm okay being 30 without, you know, being married, you know, and mostly the thing I see in my feed, at least, will say she was 23, had kids and got married. And somebody else will say, oh, she's 30, she traveled the world and the ABCD. And I'm like, okay, this is what I want to see. I need to see more of this, you know. And once upon a time, I thought there was something wrong with me. You know, when I was 24, 25, everybody else was getting married. And I'm like, well, what the hell happened to me? Did I miss the train? That I'm 30, I'm like, I'm glad I didn't get married young. You know, I'm glad I gave myself the time to really know what Stella wants. So to be honest, I feel like it goes, you know, in any culture.
Yeah. And I would say, I guess if you look at like societies from 50 years ago or, you know, compared to now too, that was the kind of the way you would do it. You know, you go to school, you graduate, you get married, you get, you know, kids, family, all before 30. And then, you know, that you're kind of just stuck with that, I suppose, for the rest of your life. And then, but now, you know, you, like what you're saying, it's like you see people who are traveling and have been to 13 countries or something by the time they're 30. And it definitely sounds a lot more appealing. And so I guess with that, kind of like, I think what I got as the general theme of the book with your two main characters, Auntie Jennifer and Adoa. With Adoa kind of like bucking the trend, you know, Auntie Jennifer's there kind of just saying, this is what you have to do. These are the rules.
One of the thing, and I'm really glad you got the general theme. One of the thing I specifically did with that was I purposely, and this goes to for any other writing I'm ever going to write, I want to wave the line between generation gap. I say that because I grew up in both culture, and I remember, you know, when I would tell my dad, you know, I want to be a journalist, and he would tell me, what in the hell wrong with you? That's not what we study in our culture. Women, no. Like, and growing up, I didn't see a lot of women in, you know, television. I saw like maybe few. Or I saw him while working at United Nations, and, you know, he really gave me idea to embrace other culture. But it was always like, women can't go into politics. I study political science. I think I'm a rebel. I used to tell him when I was a kid, I really wanted to be a writer. And he was saying, no, that's, we don't do that. You know, you had to go to law school. You had to go to, you know, medical, you know, it just have to be something that's normal, you know, then I guess the social life or the social story or the entertainment world, you know? So I told myself in anything I do or any character I create, I want my readers to like, feel like you've met that person before and you like, understand the generation gap, regardless of what culture you're from. That's really one of the major thing I want to do in my life.
I think you brought in a lot of those devices are kind of recognizable in this and that. You know, there's the times when you know, Adoa's in the garden hitting the vape and kind of you know, I mean, that's definitely, maybe it's not reflective of the generation gap, but it's definitely reflective of the times for sure. You know,
that one, it's a little bit. So what I also did, I did bring up a little bit of, again, funny adaptation of my own life where I remember the first time I ever smoked, you know, weed. And I thought to myself, oh my God, my mother is going to bury me alive if she ever find out I ever even thought of this, you know? So I thought it would be funny if I incorporate that in the story.
I was curious about that too, how much of this was pulled from personal experience and or just interpreted fiction, I suppose. Is this you know what I'm saying with that? Is this a lot, is it kind of autobiographical in a sense, or is it just a little bit, or is it a complete work of fiction?
Should I reveal the secret? So let's say 87% of it is fiction.
Okay.
The rest is taking bits and pieces from my life and things I've gone through growing up in both culture. Or even stories I've heard from friends of what had happened to them. And I'm like, okay, I'm not crazy. You know, it's happening more than one person. And I wanted to make sure that this is a revolving, you know, this it's happening to more than one people. You know, again, we all came here. We all grew up in the United States. But like when you're starting to hear more than one story, you know, okay, this is an important issue to talk about. So 80% is fiction. Don't get me wrong. But some of it also comes from my teen years. Let's just say that.
Sure. I think that's kind of part of it. Like any writer's craft is that they have to, like, if you're going to write about it, you have to know about it somehow, you know? So, which I guess kind of brings me to like the next point in, what kind of research did you have to do, to write this, you know? So like, did you write how much of like the Chicago Board of Trade, you know, did you know about before writing this? And even just like law school.
I have to be honest with you, for that one, we winged it. But, you know, I've read so many newspaper on like schemes and I'm like, okay, you know, there's a probe here. Like I have an idea of like where this is going. Maybe I should have done a little bit more research, you know. You know, so when it came to the traditional part, my editor, I had to do a lot of research for her. And I do have hands-on knowledge, but I was back home when I was 12 years old and I'm 28 now, right? So maybe a lot of things has changed. So when it came to the marriage part, she was white, let's be honest. So I really have to like bring her into like my culture. You know, if you notice, I also did a lot of code switching. Mm-hmm. In the book, she didn't understand what we call it broken English, what that was. So I had to like give her a major, like so much example of it. To answer your question, I didn't really do a lot of research. Again, I just kind of winged it. Like, I'm a political science major. You know, you read a lot of this in Chicago. You know, sure. You read a lot about this and eventually you're just like, oh, okay, I've heard of this story before. Let me see how can I tweak it. But for my next book, it's really going to be a lot of research, for mm-hmm. sure.
Can you give us a little inside scoop as to what the next one is about, or if it's still like in the planning phase?
It is in the planning phase, but I do have an idea. That one is going to be nonfiction. Originally, I was going to do a fiction to tackle more mental health in my culture, because that is something very important to me. And it took me a while to acknowledge that we need to talk about anxiety, depression, because we don't talk about it in my culture, you know, and it's sad. And also, again, I don't just want to focus on my culture. I want to write it to the point where whatever you're from as an immigrant, you know, the struggle about how it's so hard for immigrant parents to even talk about anything.
Right.
But then I realized that I want to talk about 10 lessons I wish I was taught. So I think I'm gonna go more into nonfiction as my second book, and it's going to be Dear African Parents, in parentheses, we need to talk, sit down. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just wish we could talk about, you know, why didn't you teach me how to save money when I was a kid? You know, why weren't we ever talk about mental health? You know, why didn't you prepare me for this? Why didn't I have any saving before college? Because a lot of my white friends, when I talk to them, I'm like, oh yeah, I had this money when I went to college. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I had no savings. What are you talking about? You know?
My grandfather came over from Poland, and that's something my dad tells me all the time, is that he's like, he never told him about money, or he like told him like what to save, like what to invest in or anything like that. And so that's something that now my dad, you know, relates back to me, and kind of we have those conversations. So I definitely see like where you're coming from with that, for sure. But also, I mean, I think the topic of mental health is something that I think could span immigrants, I think, and be applied universally almost. I think, you know, you look at like the incarceration rate and how it does disproportionately affect, you know, immigrants and people of color. But at the same time, it's like if we had more mental health services, a lot of that stuff would be.
And that leads into one of the things I'm going to talk about in the books. You're going to get the scoop. It's their African, their parents. Please allow me to follow my dreams, not yours. One of the reoccurring theme I notice even in my culture is you have to be a doctor, blah, 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 blah. But nobody else is encouraging me to also study those social science because we do need that. We don't have therapists. At least I don't remember. Now when I watch some African movies, you know, you have the idea there, but it's still like not broadly accepted. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We need to come on, guys. Get on the bandwagon here.
Totally. So harking back to you're talking about your editor a little bit and the research aspect of it. What went into, or what was the publishing process? How did you go about that? So it's kind of looking at the, I don't know what you would call the page, the copyright page, I suppose. And didn't see, you know, like where it was publish other than in the back it's made in Las Vegas. So how can you just talk about that whole process a little bit?
Because I'm self-published.
Okay. That's what
this was my first time ever doing anything. You're gonna laugh at me, but I'm gonna pull up a book. It's very funny, I'm telling you. This was the whole publishing process. I bought a book on Amazon. For 17 bucks, they said how to publish a book on Amazon. Real advice from someone who's doing it well. And to be honest, every step, it was just basically my guiding, you know, piece. Every step of the way, I follow everything he said and it turned out good. The only thing I wish he would have went into more is the marketing. You know, I'm by myself. My boyfriend, he's in IT, so he helps me as much as he can. But I mean,
yeah.
A lot of things I've learned now within my first book, publishing my first book, I know that when I come up with my second book, I'm not going to make the same mistake. There's no way I'm going to do that. But it's been a learning curve, to be honest, right? Like,
yeah.
Sucks sometimes because if you're not well known or owned by a big publishing house, nobody wants to review you.
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes can suck. But I, you know, having a lot of people read the book and telling me that I'm so happy you're talking about this, it keeps me going because I know what I'm fighting for. It's important to someone. And it's very important to talk about. So
that's what I was wondering if it was a self-publishing kind of deal. And more power to you. That takes a lot. And that's very, very commendable.
So actually, a couple of days before the book got published, it almost didn't get published because I have given a copy of it to Mrs. Eddie.
Yeah, sure.
And she read it and she gave me her feedback. And I was like, I'm done. I'm not doing this. I threw the whole thing away. I was like, forget it. I'm just not going to do it. And my boyfriend was like, okay, you're probably freaking out. So he read the script, you know, with what she sent back. And he was like, oh, yeah, you might want to fix that.
Huh.
I almost didn't publish this book. I was like, and, you know, I was also taking 15 credit at the time. So it was like, I basically just threw my hand in it. I was like, I'm not doing it.
I mean, I guess that's good constructive criticism. But when did you begin writing it? Was it, there's a lot of references to the pandemic. So was it kind of just you're at home and you're like, let's write a book.
I had the idea for a while. But I'm going to get a bit personal here. It was during the George Floyd protest that summer. We were at home. The pandemic was happening. I was stressed. And my former editor, he just told me, just write how you feel. You know, jot down everything. People watch. Do whatever to just help you. You know, because he's at the time, he knows that I love writing. And, you know, and we originally, this was it was written for a TV show, let's be honest. I got a deal to work for one of the biggest network, Africa. But, you know, it's a sitcom. and it was the contract was going to air on YouTube, you know. So the more people watch it, the more I get paid. And so, you know, the pay was going to be split. They were going to take their percentage. My actors and actresses were not acting up. I mean, they were acting up. I'm sorry. Because at the time I was investing my money in, you know, I'm the one that's writing, directing, and the actors and actor wouldn't get paid until I get the money from the network. So that deal fell through. When I tell you I cried my eyes out. I was upset. This was my big breakthrough, you can say, because I'm also an actress. Like, I've done acting for so long. I've studied it. So it broke my heart. I shut down writing I threw it away and I was like, forget it. I'm not doing this anymore. And during the pandemic, my first editor was like, you know what? Write again, jot down how you feel, what's going on. And people watch. And then it was my 28th birthday that I realized, after my aunt told me, when are you getting married? That's when I realized, okay, let's face our fear together. And so I took the piece that I wrote originally for the sitcom, and I took out a lot of, how do you call it? Now it's called Show and Tell. And I just took out a lot of stuff, and I reconstructed the writing more into like a novel.
Well, that's pretty tough. I mean, like, it's, there's, you know, like, even like we were saying, when you given the work to Edie, like, you get feedback from somebody and it's tough hearing it, you know, and then, like, let alone like taking the whole thing apart, deconstructing it, and then recreating it as something new.
It's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot. Well, okay, so maybe let's go back a little bit toward like the beginning somewhat. And so does Aroa's name have a specific meaning, or is it something that's just more of kind of a more common name?
There's no specific meaning. I know one thing that I like to do with all my characters that I want to create is, at least the lead one, I want to give them a very African or authentic name.
Sure.
I maybe just call it like a for the culture kind of representing type of thing. I went on Google, typed in the most African name, and that came up, and I picked it up. Great. There's the meaning to it.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so Auntie Jennifer is as we were saying, like, pretty old school. You know, she's very traditional and religious. And was that very common in your upbringing as well? Like, do you have, like, an aunt that was this person, or somebody else in your family that's kind of pushing that?
Somebody.
Gotcha.
and one of the things I really wanted to, you know, she was my hardest character, let me tell you, because what I wanted to do is, like, no matter where you're from, we all have that one aunt you just want to tell, dude, respectfully, go away. Yeah, it's someone in my family. But I wanted to create it in terms of, like, again, no matter where you're from or what culture you're from, you know.
Okay.
That one aunt that just want to snooze and everything.
She's very, you paint her in such a good picture. Like, I think, you know, I have an image in my head of who she is, what she looks like. And I think you did a really good job of creating her. But another character, so Jessica, you know, she's only around briefly, but same thing, is like you describe her in such a way that you know exactly who she is, what kind of person she is. But did she have more of a backstory behind her, or did you just want to leave her as just that, you know, who she was, who she appeared to be in the story?
She was made up as I went with the story, because everybody wants, you know, you want to make the love story interesting, right? Mm-hmm. No, she doesn't have a backstory. She was just, she got thrown in there, and I was like, okay. Let's see what you can do here. You got to do some damage here.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then let's see this. So, like, on page 57, you know, you see that, you know, the two, Adoa and Jack, are both holding secrets against each other. And as I guess I was saying, like, normally this is be seen as a red flag in a successful relationship, but is this what you intended, or did you have this as something as, like, they'll both be able to get past this, you know, kind of thing to make them stronger in the end?
You guys are going to hate me because I come from a background of acting, right? Like in acting, you always want to break the characters and then it's like it's a prop, right? And then maybe you bring them back together and maybe you don't. That was my intent originally. Honestly, that was my intent all along because, again, it goes with the training, right? Like you, every movie or anything you ever watch that has love in it, character naturally that break away and then they come back.
Right.
You know, that's weird. I actually haven't thought about it. Like, yeah, I guess it is unhealthy.
Well, not always, I suppose, but.
So as I kept writing, I just figure eventually they're both going to grow into whomever they want to be, right?
Sure.
Okay. 30, you know, they can choose.
So how does that, if a woman isn't married before 30, how does that appear? How does that reflect on the parent or guardian, whoever's, you know?
Oh, child. There or the beautiful, shining, whatever of the family. As I don't know what page, as Auntie Adoa clearly compare Adoa and her cousin, you know, at the age she got married and look at her, there you go to law school and damn it, you still don't have anything, not even an engagement ring, zero.
Right.
How dare you move in with the man not even married? parents. And to be quite fair, my mom still tells me that, you know. I mean, not in the way as the character portrayed, the story is told, sure. But it's like, oh, when are you getting married?
I'm like, yeah, the little bird on your shoulder that keeps chirping, you know.
And it's like, for the last 48 time, mom, I'm not Jesus. When he says time, it's time. And even the other day, here's a perfect example. I had an old friend of mine. He's a male. He sent me a message on Facebook and he was like, hey, how's it going? Like, I'm good. And he's like, oh, I feel like you should have gotten married now that you have everything else figured out. Mm. And it took everything inside of me to tell, you know, I think you'd get.
Yeah, right.
One, I was going to tell him, did you read my book? And then the second option was, you get the point. But I told him, I'm glad you're concerned about my marital status, but some women just have a lot more to accomplish, you know? And I'm like, marriage is a beautiful thing. I'm not denying it. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not God, you know? Two, I mean, I've accomplished so much. How about we focus on that, you know? And then it, again, I was so happy because I'm like, okay, what I'm doing, I'm fighting for something good, you know? And it was a happy reminder for me that you're doing good, you know? This is going to be great, you know? For even future generation to think about it. It's like, why do I have to be married by that time? You know?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, you wanted to reference to the food.
Yeah, that's what, let's talk about that. So like you made your podcast around and you mentioned it in your author's bio as well. So can you describe some of these foods that are mentioned in the story? So tapioca zogbon.
Yeah, that is my favorite, you know, dish of all time. It's kind of like, how do I just think of croissants with butter in the morning. It's not that, but like that breakfast, you know, feeling you get when you're eating your favorite. Or think about, I guess American, you guys like scrambled eggs with cheese. You know, just think about that feeling.
Sure.
You
get. Sure.
Basically, it's tapioca pearls and it's made with milk. You can add peanut to it. I have the happiest memory around that dish because when I was a kid, my grandma would make me that before she drops me off school. And when I would come home, she knows how much I love it. She would make that. Sometimes she would give me fried yam. Fried yam and plantains are my... You can never take those two things away from me. So I always like to share food because again, like my growing up, I saw my grandma make me, that was her love language to me, you know. When I would get home from school, she would make me food, you know, and all the time she wanted to spend with me was around the kitchen, you know, we cooked together. Even when I came to the United States, that the comfort of food kept me close to home. Although she wasn't here, my mother would cook us a lot of the dishes we grew up eating. So it's a very, I guess you can say, personal thing.
Sure.
Check it out. So, and boule bez, it's a French dish. I look up a quick, easy French recipe and I'm like, that you're going to have. And I look at, oh, what, French one? Yep. So that menu, honestly, it was a quick research. I went on Google. I'm like, what do I want to eat? And the French wine was something my father had all the time growing up. So that was an easy one, the dessert. But I wanted to pick a French, recipe, you can say.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having Jack in there too kind of, makes it more, what's the word? Just makes a little bit more sense too, you know, so. And can you find any of these in Chicago? Or is this just, like I said, yeah? Oh, okay.
The tapioca pearls, you just get tapioca pearls. Zobon is my native language. It's just a way of calling the dish.
Okay.
But it's just tapioca, you boil it, you add the tapioca, you add milk to it, and you add peanuts, I say. But I guess the zobon is the native way we call it in my home country. So I figure when my Ewe girls or Togolese friend read it, they will also have their memory of whatever story they have behind, you know, that time when they also, you know, drink or had that food. So.
Well, I think breakfast is my favorite meal of the day. So I think I'll definitely probably look into that and try to make it, try my hand at it.
Okay. I promise. So if I may ask you, what do you think of this story?
So, I read the, you know, front to back, the acknowledgement and, you know, all the way to the end, like I said, was where I saw where it was made. After reading like that last paragraph of the acknowledgement, you know, it's like, so this book is for the girls all over the world. I'm like, okay, you know, that's fair. And so like, right, yes, I still went into it kind of open-minded and it turned out to be a page turner, you know, I'll be honest. Like it was a good, I think the part, I don't know if it was after not the first chapter, but when Jack and Adoa are in bed and he's saying how he has to come clean and I'm like, oh no, you know, it's like, this is, he's got something, man. There's a problem here. And it wanted me, you know, it's a good cliffhanger that kept me like wanting to know more and keep reading. And, I mean, you see, I don't know if you can see some of these stickers, but like those are all good points where I'm like, I had questions about, and that's kind of how I adapted these questions. But it's, I know what you're saying about it's made for girls all over the world, but I think it's, you know, it's a good book for anyone, I think, you know, but aimed toward women.
Yeah. At least for my generation, right? Yeah.
And it's a good message, I think, is that, yeah, I mean, like you with, and that's, I think what I wanted to kind of end on was that what I felt, like I said, was the apex or the peak of the story and page 100 or 101 after the Ruth Bader Ginsburg quote. You know, that whole paragraph is that like it's a celebration. Let's see. A celebration of yourself kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I did look up to her, so I thought was good for me. I was like, come on girls, we got this.
And was that just a quote, a memorable quote that you knew of her, or was that?
It was a memorable quote that I cherish a lot. I wish you could see, but I actually have her necklace sticker on my laptop, and it reminds me how far I've come, you know, because I just became a citizen this year. And I know, you know, if you notice even the story I talked about, she worked, Adowa worked endless, you know, making nothing, you know, just to get that, an experience, we like to call it. And that also goes with some of the things I went through as an immigrant myself, right? So that quote was going, you know, appreciating what she's saying, but also what I've been through, because I know that I deserve it all. Now I'm everywhere. Again, like I said, I'm not supposed to major in political science, but hey, yeah. Right? And yeah. Often I remember at the beginning of this year, I have a friend of mine who's Togolese, and she does podcasting, but she really focuses more on mental health. That's what she's fighting for. I mean, she doesn't have all the resources, but like she's using all she can to really start talking about this conversation. So she was hosting me and she asked me, and one of the listeners that was on the show before heard what I was talking about, saying, you know, like, I believe women should be able to do whatever they want. And he said that at the end of the day, I'm still an African woman. And that's, sometimes it gets to me, because I can try to be a superhero with my words, but I'm only human, you know? And that's one of the stigma that I have to fight against, and I'm still fighting against. So that quote, it really, really means a lot to me. So I felt like it was important to talk about it.
Sure.
It sucks being told, you're just an African woman.
Yeah. Well, first, let me say congratulations on your citizenship. Yeah, that's a big one. But also, let me just read this quote, or you know, aloud, so people know what we're referencing here. It is from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and the quote is: "Women belong in all places where decisions are being made." And yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's something that I think, you know, coming from. Even just like at the newsroom, the independent at NEIU, I think after not this spring semester, but next fall semester, like there'll be a woman editor in chief, and like I think we're all kind of working toward that, to making that a real thing. So yeah, I think that's pretty cool. Do you have anything else you'd like to say that I haven't brought up?
I'm just thankful for everyone who has supported me on this journey. It's not easy being a self-published author, but I'm learning every day, and I continue to hope to improve. And I mean, like, my email, I don't know if you are allowed to give my email out, but like, if anybody ever want to reach out to me to even find out more about like what I'm thinking or what's my next, writing piece, I'm all open,
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I could definitely drop that as well. So the book is 30 Aunt.
Hunta.
Hunta. When Everything Fails at 30 by Stella Kwonu.
I'll let that slide.
All right. And you can find it in Amazon Books. And is there any places else where you can find it?
No, right now it's only on Amazon. Again, it's a learning curve, right? It's only on Amazon. I do plan on putting it on Google for the people that are not fans of Amazon, but for now,
yeah.
Amazon. And you can, if you do have Unlimited, Kindle Unlimited, you can read it for free, actually. So
there you have it. And I mean, it's a self-published book, and it's, product of the pandemic. So I would hope in the sense that, it was something that a project that you partook in during the pandemic. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Stella.
Thanks.
I recommend this book to, like I said, I went into it with the idea that it was just me for women, but it turned out to be a page turner, so I would recommend it to anyone.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. That about does it for this edition of Cup of Sugar, and thanks to Stella Kwonu for sitting down and talking with us. The Independent just started a new section called Artists of the Week. So if you are an artist who's looking to get your work put out there, please get in contact with The Independent and we could potentially sit down and have a conversation ourselves. Thanks a lot, everybody. See you next time.